We're all searching for home. I truly believe all of us live in homes, and some of you are probably more at home than others. Where is home? Some people say our real home is the last place our parents lived in some ways. You know, it's always kind of a mystical place that we all try, and yet none of us are here permanently. We're looking for a permanent home. Jesus knows this, and he says, I am going to prepare a place for you, and then I'm going to come and take you with me. A place that is unique and beautiful and everything you ever wanted, and it's all happening right now. The home that we're going to have is being built within us. He says, make your home in me, and I'll make mine in you. I don't know about you, but I've lived in many, many places. I counted them once as something like 25 different homes, and I'm sure it's higher than that now as a priest. And we moved a lot, and not always to different cities, but different homes in the cities. One of the places we lived was near LAX Airport, and this is before I worked for the airline. I moved back there later when I got a job in the area. Well, we lived near on the north side of the airport, and they began to open a new runway. They called it the North North Runway. And our home was in an area where you could not sell the homes because the noise was so great once they opened this runway. So the airport bought all these homes. And so we lived in two different places that the airport took and bulldozed these homes. If you ever rent a car, Hertz rent a car at LAX, my home was right in the parking lot. That's one of them. That's gone. The other one was in a really nice neighborhood, very, very beautiful homes. I have a good friend that's a pilot. He's been waiting for me to mention him in a homily for 7 years now, Jim Timchison, and he had a home like this also down the street that was taken. And when you fly into the North Runway, you can see where we used to live. My home was on a hill, and the street was down below here. It was really nice. And I remember after the airport bought all these homes, these homes were so nice, they began to ship them to the inner city. And I woke up one day at 3 a.m. because there were all these lights out in front of the out in the street down below. It was my neighbor's home being moved down the street. It looked like E.T. had landed in our driveway, all these lights flashing. You haven't lived until you've seen your neighbor's home going down the street. And the garage followed it about a quarter of a mile. I couldn't sleep. I was watching this thing. I don't know how they got it to Watts, but that's where it went. But you can't go home again, you know? We look, if you go to a home you've lived in and somebody else has bought it, it isn't the same, is it? There's a bit of a disquiet when we see that someone else now lives there. It's the same with a pastor going back to a previous parish. There's a little bit of disquiet because the new pastor immediately changes a few things and you think, I can't go home again, you know? And that's part of life. There have been a number of interesting things in the news this week, but the one I want to focus on is something that Stephen Hawking said. There's a lot of prominent atheists these days making all kinds of ridiculous statements, and I usually don't bother bringing them up. How many of you heard what Stephen Hawking said this week? Ooh, some of you people don't look in the internet enough. He said he's one of the most preeminent scientists in the country, certainly probably the most famous one, perhaps not the best one, but he's written a lot of good books. His book, A Brief History of Time, I must have read it 10 times, but the reason is I couldn't understand a word of it, and I'd put it by the bedside, and within one paragraph, I was out like a light. It was better than a sleeping pill, you know. But, you know, I would not dare. I love reading about string theory and black holes, and these are his specialties, the relativity. I love reading this stuff. I read a lot of science. But I would never dare to pontificate in public about these things. Well, my theory on string theory is blah, blah, blah. What do I have no right to say that. But some of these prominent atheists have no problem moving right into to our spiritual faith and proclaiming it doesn't exist simply because they can't find it in science. Well, God, from the very beginning, has never submitted himself either to the scientific method or to being tested. In fact, he's testing us. It is the stone. We are building a home in faith. The cornerstone of all that we have as Christians is our faith. It is the stone which is rejected by, he said, you the builders in that time, and by many who are building an edifice in this world without God, and that Jesus, the cornerstone, they're going to trip over and fall because they're missing what the really real of this world, because it is not available directly to the five senses. Many things in science we can't prove with the five senses. What happened before the Big Bang, for example. We have to go to theory. We can't test it. God is like that. As a priest, and also personally, I have seen so many indications of God's existence. None of them are proof positive, but that's by definition. God will never do that until the last day. But he does. Many of you have experienced things at the end of a relative's life, for example, or things that could not be coincidences, signs that God gives us of his existence. To those with faith, we can see them. It's almost as if God is real, really here and visible to us. I had a very interesting experience when I was discerning the priesthood that I want to share with you. It was published in a book called 202 Eucharistic Miracle Stories. I knew the nun that wrote it, and I submitted my story, and they put it in there. So a couple of you may have read it in there. I was praying in my home church at that time of St. Jerome, which is near the airport, LAX, where I was living and working. And this church is a rather large, round church with many doors and windows, a lot of glass. And I was having my holy hour, which I did daily. I had a swing shift, so I worked at noon. And I would come in there and pray around 10, something like that. And I was sitting there praying right about the middle of the church here, looking at the altar. The tabernacle was right here. And I loved praying in that church. And I was always asking God what I ought to do with my life, and my company was moving to Arizona, and I've shared all that with you, and I had about a year to make up my mind, looking for signs. And I'm sitting there praying, reading the Psalms, and a bird flew in the one open door that was, they had an open door, and I was sitting by the breeze. It was kind of a hot day. Bird flew in. He starts flying around the church. Well, that was the end of my prayer time. I'm sitting there. Anybody listening to the tape, I'm rotating my head and watching this bird. I'm going, get out of here. You know? So it was a very large church. And then it swooped down and landed right behind the altar where I couldn't see it. I thought, gee, that's strange. So I got up to look and see what was behind the altar. There's nothing there. And the bird, when I got close to it, it flew away. Flew out the door on its own. I thought, gee, that's strange. So I sat down to pray again. I'm not making this up, but the bird flew back in again about 5 minutes later. Or another one, looked like the same bird, about this big. Flew around the church again. I thought, oh, brother. Landed right behind the altar and disappeared behind the altar. So I thought, there's something funny going on here. And I got up and I was a sacristan. I had ownership of that church, you know. Had a key to get in. I chased that bird out and I closed the door so there wouldn't be a repeat performance of that particular incident. And then I sat down to finish the psalm I had begun to read. And the psalm went like this. The sparrow herself finds a home, the swallow a nest for her brood. She lays her young by your altars, Lord of hosts, my King and my God. They are happy who dwell in your house, forever singing your praises. And I thought to myself, Lord, are you trying to tell me something? What do you think? I didn't get it. So I called my friend, Sister Marcia Kay, who's a nun up at the Port Clares in Spokane. I've known her for decades. She got a lot of these phone calls from me. And I told her what happened, and she said, Gary, does God have to hit you over the head with a brick? She said, If that bird could find the altar, why can't you? That's the message. So, of course, it took me 6 more months to make up my mind after that. But I say that to you because, now, no, that's not going to prove that God exists. I suppose there could be a logical explanation for that. But it was one of the many things that happened to me, of which there are innumerable ones in my own experience. And as a priest, I've seen innumerable other such things in your lives and things you shared with me. One lady after the last Mass told me she went to Medjugorje and her rosary turned to gold. When I led a pilgrimage there, a lady on the airplane coming home showed me a rosary that was half gold and half silver. It was in the process of changing right before my eyes. That doesn't prove God exists. But it's not explainable either, you know. God is inviting us to a home. My home, he said to me, your home is with me. I'm calling you to the ministerial priesthood if you're willing to say yes to me. And I was not willing. I had to be dragged off, you know, to the seminary because I really didn't think I had what it took to do this. And it's kind of funny looking back at it, but God had to really do a lot of dramatic stuff because I wasn't listening. But all of us are called to the common priesthood of all believers. Same, the ministerial priesthood is a part, it is pulled apart only to serve the body. We all have a common priesthood of our baptism. And St. Peter says, you are living stones in a building that Christ is constructing, and that begins in our hearts. God is building a home inside of us. And what do those stones consist of? The spiritual sacrifices that we're making. Just as the priest behind the altar is offering the spiritual sacrifice of the Last Supper made present to you at this Mass, it's the same Last Supper, the same sacrifice, not a new one. In the same way, you are called as, in your version of the priesthood that you share, to make spiritual sacrifices like the priest offers the bread and wine to God. You are offering the sacrifice of your life. And this includes the sacrifice of praise when we have a beautiful series of days like this and we all thank God the Iris Parade was no rain and all this kind of thing. Or we offer the sacrifice of an illness that we have, the death of a loved one that is hurting us, a word that was hurtful that we haven't been able to get over, the sacrifice of our children when they act up and we are trying to be patient, the sacrifice of being sick and trying not to be a burden, you know, the sacrifice of coming to Mass when perhaps you might like to sleep in, the sacrifice of being faithful to my hour of prayer once a week or once a day. And God blesses that. Life is filled with opportunities to make a spiritual sacrifice. The only thing that's necessary is to offer it to God. Suddenly, my whole life becomes a sacrifice. My work, my home, my family, even my sins. When I offer them to God, he washes them away, and it becomes a sacrifice that's pleasing to God. Can you believe it? We can't throw him out except by mortal sin. And then he will come right back the minute we ask forgiveness, especially sacramentally. So we are very careful what kind of home we are building. There are many in this world who think, as I forgot to mention what Stephen Hawking said. He said, heaven is a fantasy. You are nothing but a machine. When this computer dies, that's the end of you. I don't like that worldview. Every single society in history has always had some sort of belief in the afterlife. They didn't always believe that all of us went there, but that one existed was something in our hearts that we know. This century is filled with so much darkness in so many ways. We've lost the sight of how things really are, and God calls us. Jesus calls us, have faith in me. I really exist. I have a home prepared for you. Only have faith. So we are careful what kind of home we are building. We are careful to invite God that he might dwell within the home within us, that he might construct a home with our help in our faith, that he will dwell in. One day, God will pull that out of us in the next world, and we will live in it forever with him. And that is no fantasy.